Colleges across Illinois are set to begin classes in the next few weeks, with some students already beginning to move onto campuses. And in the midst of a pandemic, the semester is shaping up to be unlike any other. College administrations are advising students to maintain social distancing and avoid in-person gatherings, large gatherings at least, with some universities even asking students to sign pledges to abide by university social distancing policies. But according to the CDC, COVID-19 cases among the 18 to 29-year-old age group have been climbing every month since April, and they accounted for about 27% of the U.S. cases in July. And for many college-age students, the college experience is exciting. It's a time of life when it's filled with new independence, exploration, and yes, parties. So can universities really expect that college-age students will follow safety guidelines? Listeners, we want to know how you're feeling about colleges reopening this fall. Maybe you're a student, a parent, a teacher, or just a resident of a college town. Make your voice heard. We want to hear from you. You can join our conversation at 800-222-9455. The number again is 800-222-9455. Classes in many universities in Illinois are expected to be back in session by the end of this month or next month at the latest. Give us a call, 800-222-9455. We want to know what you think of that. Here to talk more about the social psychology of young adults and how that might be affected by a pandemic is Professor Alan Barton. He's an assistant professor and extension specialist in human development and family studies at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Hello, Alan, and welcome to the 21st.
Hello, and thanks for having me.
We're also joined by a student panel from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And please help me if I mispronounce any of your names. But we have with us Alexis Perezica, the president of the student body, Danny Dirienzo, a senior studying industrial engineering, Amanda Diner, a senior and president of the Illini rowing team and a member of Greek Life, and Nina Chen, a senior studying bioengineering. Alexis, Danny, Amanda, and Nina, thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
And from Illinois State University, we're also joined by Finice Walker, president of the Zeta Phi Beta sorority at Illinois State University and a senior studying psychology. Hello, Finice, and welcome to you to the 21st.
Hello.
Hi. So, and we're, I should say, I think most of the people on the line today are joining us by Zoom, and sometimes it just takes a second to mute and unmute to listeners. So we will get through this. Professor Barton, I want to begin with you. We're going to hear from college students in a little bit, but I wanted to begin, we in preparing for this segment, we read an article in the Wall Street Journal called "Why the Teenage Brain Pushes Young People to Ignore Virus Restrictions." You work in the fields of human development and family studies, so can you talk about why might teenagers and young adults be inclined to ignore pandemic or virus restrictions?
Sure. So I'll start by talking a bit about the adolescent brain, and then if we can follow up about social context as needed.
Sure.
So I read the article by the Wall Street Journal that was out, and so there's a couple points I think that are really important to highlight. So in short, young adults and adolescents' brains are very well developed. Our understanding of the adolescent brain has really increased dramatically over, say, the past two decades. And we've learned a lot that during adolescence, which let's loosely define as, say, spanning the ages of 11 to 25, that this is a time period characterized by a lot of neuroplasticity. So by that, we mean growth and pruning of different parts of the brain, and that the prefrontal cortex, which is responsible for tasks related to executive functioning and cognitive control, is arguably the last region to mature fully. And that's obviously what gathers lots of attention and press, and it wasn't even informed some of the Wall Street Journal article. But in stating that, I think it's also important that we need to make sure we exercise caution when interpreting and generalizing these findings. So it's important to remember that a lack of full maturity does not equate to immaturity. And so the brains of college students are extremely sophisticated, right? It's one factor that even allowed them to get accepted and succeed here as students. So as I look at the data, to suggest that the nature of brain development that occurs during adolescence, specifically the protracted development of the PFC, prevents individuals in this age from practicing some of the basic public health guidelines, I think probably maybe going beyond what the data can tell us.
Interesting. You know, and I've heard this. I mean, can you talk about this idea? You said, I think you said, if I heard you correctly, adolescence goes from age, 12 to 25. And I think that most people maybe think that adolescence ends, you know, when you turn 18, right? You can vote, you can join the military, end of adolescence. But I mean, is this something that, our understanding of how brains develop, has that evolved over time and changed recently?
Certainly. So, and even within the academic field, the discussion of when adolescence starts and stops is a moving target, but it certainly has been more prolonged over time. That when you look at, if you will, the onset of puberty, which is the typical defining point for when adolescence starts, and then the ending point is much more independence, financial, economic, that are much harder to link to and I define. But part of that is with the brain, that what we've learned from the brain is that it is still developing into kind of these mid-20s. And so because of that, we're seeing, along with some societal changes, we're really linking adolescence to later in life. But there's also this other developmental comment on this new stage of emergent adulthood that they'll really cap between the ages of 18 to, say, 25. And that is really gets in the idea of people and youth and character individuals in this age that don't see themselves as adults, but also don't see themselves as adolescents, teenagers, children. So, and there's even characteristics about this age of emergent adulthood that play a part into some of the cultural conversations we're having on this topic.
And I know that from my own reporting work on the criminal justice field, that there are people in criminal justice who say the idea of, an immediate transition from, say, juvenile court to adult court at age 17 or 18, that there should be some intermediate understanding of, you know, people's ability to make, people's judgment, I guess, as they get into that emerging adulthood period. And I wonder if that's something you've seen as well?
Certainly. That our understanding of the adolescent brain has really helped us understand how individuals in this time frame are processing information, particularly in light of the social context that decision making is occurring in.
Okay, so I think we have a lot of young adult developing brains waiting to weigh in on this conversation with us here today. I do want to remind listeners, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about the return of college students to college campuses. We've been speaking with Professor Alan Barton, a professor of human development and family studies, and I want to welcome now a number of students from Illinois universities talking about what college campuses might look like, what the college experience might be like in light of the pandemic. Of course, we want to invite you to join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Whether you're a college student, parent, or maybe you just live near a university, how are you feeling about students coming back to schools across the state? 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. Alexis, I want to begin with you. You're the president of the University of Illinois student body. What are you hearing about your fellow students' worries about returning to campus? Oh, I'm sorry. I think we have lost Alexis. So I guess I will begin or turn to Amanda, and maybe I can ask you the same question. I wonder if you've, what are you talking about with your peer groups? What have you been hearing from people about, are they excited to return to campus? Are they concerned about it?
Yeah. So a lot of the people I know are understandably concerned about returning. They have a large fear for the safety of their health. But for the most part, and I am the president of rowing, so I sort of have to organize a return to the rowing season. They're concerned about how they can do their regular activities in a safe way. So I think that a large part of people's concerns will be sort of minimized when we can come out with a definitive plan that shows, using CDC guidelines and research, how we can bring them back to their sport or their regular activities in a safe way, which is a big part of what we're trying to do.
And what personal guidelines are you planning to follow as you return to school? Are you expecting to, you know, have a different sort of personal activities than you did maybe when you were at home?
So I'm actually living in a house with 12 other people. So the amount of socialization that I'm getting is a lot greater than when I was at home. However, I don't plan on going out to bars, or I'm also in a sorority, going out to sorority events that are going to confine me in any way. So if I am able to follow social distancing guidelines, wear a mask, and I know that other people will also do the same, then I would feel comfortable going to an event. However, going to a bar where I don't know a lot of the people, and I know that a lot of people aren't going to be wearing masks, and the event is really not going to be guaranteed to be outside, I would not feel comfortable going to something like that, which is something that I would usually do during a regular year.
Sure. And you mentioned you're also the president of the Illini women's rowing team. And as you said, you're still planning to get out on the water this fall. What sort of precautions are you looking at there? I mean, I imagine it's difficult to social distance in a boat, especially mm-hmm. as you're, you know, working hard and expelling air, I would assume, you know, to pull the oars.
Yeah. So we're actually looking into a number of different options. U.S. Rowing has also provided some guidelines to what is safe for us to do. So originally, our starting position will be only allowing 1, 2, and 4-person boats, which are the smallest boats allowed. And as the season progresses, if we think that it's safe enough, and I think the number is, there's a number, it's about 7 new cases per day per 50,000 people, I believe, is the number that U.S. Rowing came up with. If the number is under that, then we can row team boats, which are 8-person boats, which are arguably very hard to social distance in, because you can't like move throughout the boat. You're in a fixed position. So we're looking into options like wearing face shields, wearing masks in the boat, which I know is not a super ideal situation, because it is a cardio heavy activity, so it might cause some issues for a few people, but there are a lot of options being looked at. We're planning on not sharing any of our equipment, so oars and seats, and then also keeping boats consistent. So the biggest boat we can have is 8 people. If we send a boat out on the lake with 8 people, it's going to be those 8 people at least, you know, for the entire week. And then in addition to that, the school is having us test mandatory twice a week. So sure. The team will also implement that policy for anyone that wishes to come to our practices.
Okay. Danny DiRienzo, I want to bring you into the conversation. You're a senior studying industrial engineering in Urbana. What is your living situation for the upcoming semester? And what kind of conversations are you having with roommates in preparation for the start of school?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Brian. So I'm planning on living with 5 other roommates in a house just off of campus in Urbana. And something we had a few weeks ago was a roommate meeting online virtually to basically talk about kind of how comfortable each of us are with coming back and with the different.
And you know what? I'm sorry, Dan. I had a little mix up with my timer here, and we need to take a break now. So I'm going to cut you off. We will come right back to you after we take this short break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about colleges in Illinois, universities, most being set to begin classes in the next few weeks. Some students are already moving back onto campus if they haven't already. And it's going to be an unusual semester. Some schools are asking students to sign pledges to abide by social distancing guidelines, but we have been seeing case counts among the 18 to 29-year-old age group climbing. Every month since April, they're accounted for more than a quarter of the U.S. cases in July, which is a change from the early days of the pandemic. We're talking about the brain development of youths and why some might be resistant to some of the virus restrictions, social distancing, that sort of thing, and just the need of young people to socialize from a sort of biological perspective. For that, we are joined by Professor Alan Barton from the University of Illinois, and who is works in human development and family studies, and a panel of students from U of I and Illinois State University. We've been speaking with Amanda Diner, Danny DiRienzo, and in a few minutes we're going to welcome Nina Chen, Finice Walker, and Alexis Marie Perez-Chica to the conversation. Danny, I'm sorry I had to cut you off before the break because of a little mix-up with my timer. This is live radio, in case anyone ever had any doubts. I was asking you about your roommate, conversations with roommates when you're coming back. And I wonder, you know, if there are any disagreements, right? We've seen even in families, people, you know, maybe you got the one brother who won't wear a mask or something like that. I wonder if you had any conversations with your roommates about, or how did those conversations go?
Yeah, so we held a virtual meeting a few weeks ago. And the biggest reason for calling this is because since most of our classes will be online, we're going to be spending a lot of time in this house together. So the last thing I want is someone's behavior or someone, you know, inviting over a lot of friends, making other people uncomfortable, is those kind of passive aggressive flares coming up. So that's why we called this meeting. And we each basically laid out our personal opinions about what we felt was safe, you know, what kind of conditions we should have in allowing friends over. Should we take their temperature? Should we make sure they got tested recently that week with the rapid testing U of I provides for free to all students? So we went through all those various things. And initially, the big thing that came up is we kind of created this almost illusion, I would say, looking back at it now, that we could create almost a friend bubble where we would say, you know, there's five of us living in the house. Let's each pick three friends. And then that's going to be kind of like our social bubble, and that'll prevent us from spreading it. But the further we dived into it, and then we were like, oh, but, you know, I need to have my lab partner over to help me with a lab, and he's not a friend. Does he fit into this category? And, you know, we obviously can't control the people that our friends interact with. So that bubble just expands exponentially then. So we kind of realized that that wasn't a very foolproof situation. So we've kind of switched to a more lenient approach, which is taking proper precautions, you know, cleaning any spaces anytime someone has a friend over, not having large groups over. We're thinking about buying a digital thermometer to just take people's temperature when they walk in. Just doing common sense precautions. And another big one is, you know, if you saw in your friend's Snapchat story that they were out at the bars last night and it was packed, you know, maybe not invite that person over just for the safety of all the other roommates.
I tried, and thinking back to my own college experience and just like deciding which of us would do the dishes, let alone be the COVID patrol and taking temperatures like a business. I imagine that's going to be a challenging situation. Finice Walker, I want to bring you into the conversation now. You're the president of the Zeta Phi Beta sorority at Illinois State University. Greek life is obviously known. Part of that is social gatherings. I wonder how are you planning to handle that or adapt to that in the current pandemic situation?
Well, as far as the sorority nationally, they've already told us that we most definitely can't host anything that's gonna be in person. I know as far as with the school, we aren't able to hold such large events. And if we do plan on doing that, then it has to be in a certain area and it has to be scoped out first so they can see just how many people can attend with still being able to maintain 6 feet. It is definitely a social gathering type of thing when you're in a sorority, and hosting events is just one way that we are able to reach the students. So switching everything virtually is going to be really tough because you kind of have to really, really think hard on ideas that's going to be interesting to be able to engage with the students and have them engage back with you. So I think that's kind of where we're at right now, just trying to come up with ideas that can still be fun, but at the same time, still maintain distancing and those safety precautions.
Yeah, I imagine that's got to be, it's got to be a change, a difficult change to adapt to, though. And I want to say thank you, especially Phinese, for being here. We reached out to something like 20 Greek, our producers reached out to 20 Greek life organizations across the state, and you were the only one that was willing to come on and talk to us about this. So thank you especially for that. Nina Chen, I want to ask you, can you talk about, you know, the idea that, you know, the pandemic has kept a lot of us away from family and friends. Has that been a challenge? And how are you thinking about that as, you know, returning to campus this fall?
Yeah, definitely. So I was actually on campus until the end of the semester, so around May, but I came back home to New Jersey, where I'm originally from, for the summer. And I did find the adjustment very difficult because when I was still on campus, I obviously had my roommate who was a really close friend who I could see all the time, as well as a couple other friends that we kept in a small like social bubble so that we knew we weren't interacting with many other people. But once I came back, that kind of social group I had was obviously not here with me, and there were only there were some friends from back home that I will occasionally hang out in a like more responsible manner, but for a majority of the time I've been alone because I don't want to endanger my mom, which is the only other family member I have in the house. And although she's not at high risk, I just don't want to you know, put her in any sort of like compromising position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Professor Alan Barton, I want to bring you back into the conversation now. We were talking earlier about this Wall Street Journal article, Why the Teenage Brain Pushes Young People to Ignore Virus Restrictions. And an aspect of that story, and something I don't think really talked about as much earlier, is this idea of social interaction. We were just hearing from, you know, Nina there about how difficult the transition back home and more isolation was. At least you have a roommate maybe at school. Can you talk about the sort of, and this is what that article gets at a little, this sort of biological drive to socialize, maybe, and why that might be particularly more difficult for someone who is in that, you know, young, still developing stage of life?
Sure. So adolescence, and I'll extend that into emerging adults, is a time period that's characterized by greater influence of social context, including potential reward when making decisions. So this is when you see dopamine levels peak at this developmental stage. And there's some data that also suggests that in the roles of identity development and other processes that are really important during this time period, that peers have a very central role in that process. That said, also, I think what you see within college students is also generalizable to somewhat of the larger population. So, and what that's very clear is that we as humans are very social beings, and social connection is in many respects one of the most fundamental human needs. And so I think all of us, not just college students, have arguably some degree of fatigue setting in from the loss of human connection. This is why you even see early on and during this pandemic, Vivek Murthy, who's a former US Surgeon General, writing about the social recession being brought about and how we can go about addressing that. So getting back to college students, I think given the fundamental need for human connection, all of us in some respects have to find a way to socialize smartly, if you will, during this pandemic. And so to the degree that there's this kind of inherent need for all of us to socialize and have human interaction, that how do we go about meeting that need in a way that takes care of others and ourselves is the question that really we're all grappling with right now.
Yeah. And Alexis Marie Perez-Chica, I want to ask you, you're the president of the student body at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. You're a junior in political science. I wonder, as president of the student body, do you have faith that the entire range of students at the U of I will do what they need to do, will get tested twice a week, not conduct large gatherings, follow social distancing protocols?
Hi. Yeah, I do have faith in the students. I do have faith that the students will comply with everything that the school is asking, because the university is, I would say, doing a really great job in providing the students with a lot of great resources. We have testing on campus that is free. We have about 12 different sites on campus. We have spit testing, so it's easy. You don't have to get that stick up in your nose, and you get it done twice a week so you can know if you're safe and if your friends are safe from COVID as well. We're getting free masks from the school as well. So the school is doing a really good job making sure that we have all the supplies and resources we need to go back to school fully equipped and prepared. So I think the students will be doing a good job in making sure that they comply, especially if they see a lot of other students doing the same. We're a very big, supportive, great community there at U of I. And if we all stand together and make sure we're doing what we need to do to be safe, everyone else will follow.
And Finice Walker, I wanted to ask you, you're at Illinois State University. Obviously, it's got a different plan than the one at U of I. Do you feel comfortable with what the university has put forward? And do you feel comfortable that your fellow students will, you know, do the right thing, so to speak, in terms of, you know, preventing the spread of the pandemic?
I do feel comfortable with what they're doing because I absolutely know that it's necessary. I mean, it's all just to keep everyone as safe as, you know, they possibly can. I know it's not a guarantee that you won't catch anything, but I feel like all the guidelines that they're putting in place is very necessary. So I'm not against them. As far as everyone like following the rules, I mean, you're going to have those people who are and those people who aren't at the same time. So I feel like it's more so just like a personal thing. Like you have to just kind of make sure you're doing your part really and just trying to do the best that you can. But again, I know there's going to be some students that aren't going to necessarily be followed. The guidelines. We can only hope that a majority of the body do, but yeah.
You know, just a couple of minutes left in our conversation. Danny, I want to ask you, you know, we've heard about you know, people, whether they have faith to do, you know, in their peers to do the right thing. Can you talk about peer pressure? I mean, you and your talked about your roommates convening over, you know, digitally to kind of establish the rules. Do you think peer pressure is going to be a helpful force or maybe something that's kind of a negative force on campus this fall?
Yeah, I really do think that peer pressure goes both ways in this sense. You know, if a majority of students are wearing masks and social distancing, I felt this myself being out in public in the suburbs here. You know, I'm going to put on a mask if everyone else is. But, you know, if I walk down to the quad and everyone's out having fun in the sun and no one's wearing masks and stuff, then I'm inclined to say, oh, you know what, not today. So I really do think it goes both ways. And it's going to be crucial at the beginning of the year for U of I to enforce it as best as possible so that the peer pressure goes the right way in making everyone as safe as possible.
Okay. And we're going to have to leave the conversation there. I want to thank everybody who took the time to join us today for this segment. It was a big panel, but I'm glad you were all here, made time to speak with us on the 21st and share what you are thinking about as we head into the fall semester. We have been speaking with Danny DiRienzo, who's a senior in industrial engineering at the U of I in Urbana, Nina Chen, senior in bioengineering at Urbana, Finice Walker, president of the Zeta Phi Beta Sorority at Illinois State University and a senior in psychology, Amanda Diner, who's a senior at the University of Illinois, also president of the Illinois, Illini rowing women's team, and Alexis Marie Perez-Chica is president of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign student body, junior in political science. Last and certainly not least, Professor Alan Barton, who's an extension specialist, assistant professor in human development and family studies at the U of I in Urbana. Whew. Thank you all so much for being here today on the 21st.
Thank you.
And that is all the time we have. Before we go, I do want to make a pitch for joining our texting group. We've been hearing interesting things for listeners. It does inform our coverage. We often read your responses right here on the show. Text the word TALK to 217-803-0730. Again, the word is TALK to 217-803-0730. The 21st is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Eunice Alpasan's our engagement producer, and our intern is Zainab Qureshi. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick's our news director. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. We'll talk to you tomorrow.